I think that there's a lot to unpack with doing nothing, especially when we're talking about folks of color, specifically Black folks. And I think that for a lot of people, their worthiness is tied into what they produce, right? So if they're not producing anything, if they're not doing anything, then I think that folks are forced to grapple with, well, I'm not doing anything worthwhile. And it doesn't really focus on self. And the nature of capitalism doesn't allow people to focus on self because we need to keep doing. And I think that's part of sort of like the problematic and really toxic pieces of grind culture, you know, just grind till you can't anymore, you know, work yourself into the ground. And for me, my ancestors did not, you know, fight and struggle to get here for me to work myself into the ground. It was not only for me to survive, but to thrive. And in order to thrive, I need to invest in myself. So part of that is coming up against, okay, what does capitalism require of me, and how do I combat that in my individual practice? How do I show up in my truth in my individual practice? So I'm cr constantly creating space for myself, and then also peeling back the layers around why, you know, I may have viewed my worthiness connected to what I produce. You know, what are some of the things that I've been conditioned to believe about myself and my worthiness? What are some things that I need to unlearn and relearn?
Welcome to the No More Reasonable Doubt podcast. In season two of this podcast, it's made to help Black professionals start passion projects so they can expand their impact in the world and at work. In each episode, you can expect an interview with a Black professional who has a 9-to-5 just like you. And they've also launched a passion project into this world. You'll also get episodes with specific topics and lessons to help you move that passion project forward. I'm your host and fellow passion project starter, Mike Ambassador Bruni. Let's start the show. Our special guest today is Sade Jean-Jacques. Welcome, Sade.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am well. We should let the people know. We don't know when this recording is going to be out, but they need to know that today is Valentine's Day. We bring it into them from that space, that energy.
Absolutely.
So the first question I like to ask is, what do you do for full-time work?
Yeah, so I work as the Associate Director for Multicultural Education at Quinnipiac University. So I work with our cultural student organizations, our mentoring program, and also help to coordinate and facilitate equity and inclusion trainings for faculty, staff, and students.
Great. Now, what is your purpose or passion project, and how long has it been in existence?
Yeah. So let's see, in about, I would say in 2013, when I moved to Connecticut from Massachusetts, I started making skincare products as a hobby. It was a transitional period in my life. So I was looking for something to just keep me occupied after I went home. And eventually it turned into something that my friends and family were really excited about. And they were the ones who encouraged me to sell it. So it took me some time to sort of move forward with it as a business. But in 2016, I decided to take that leap, and I would start vending at local shows and events that were related to skincare. So the name of the business is Pascal's Body Care, and we offer organic and high quality products with centering wellness and self-care with an emphasis on focusing on Black women. And when I started the hobby, I didn't really have an overarching purpose. But as I moved forward and being a social justice educator, I knew that there were, you know, some pretty alarming disparities within the space of wellness, specifically skincare, as it pertained to Black women. So I sort of wanted to create something that disrupted that and provided something that was affordable and high quality.
Excellent. You covered so many of the questions I usually ask. Is there anything else in the origin story that you want to add in? I want to make sure I leave space for that.
Yeah. So there was a lot of ebbs and flows in my journey. And part of the origin was me not being an entrepreneur. Like entrepreneurship was never something I envisioned myself doing. So when I started, I found that I had to work backwards. So maybe even a year into the business, figuring out like, okay, I need a business plan. You know, and, you know, I need to incorporate this business and, oh, taxes and all of these things that I wasn't paying attention to because I was very much so still approaching it as a hobby. But that has long since changed.
Is there a point where you hesitated to actually start the project, and what got you over the hump?
I think that's a great question. So I did hesitate for a number of reasons to start it. I wasn't sure if I would have the time. You know, I work in higher education and my job is never just 9 to 5. It's 9 to 5 plus evenings and weekends. Of course, this was pre COVID. So I wasn't sure if I would have the time, if I even really wanted to. And I think the larger piece that I was not being honest about myself at the time with is that I didn't really know or trust if people would receive it, or receive me well for me to put myself out there. So imposter syndrome is something that I definitely struggled with. It's something that I even struggle with now. And over the last few months, I've been just sort of sitting intentionally with the ways in which that shows up for me in the entrepreneurship space and how I, you know, how that's sort of stopped me from moving forward with certain, you know, ideas, new products, and even from the way that I market has been really tamed because of, you know, how I've been struggling with imposter syndrome.
What has got you over the hump, that point where you were hesitating, or the points where you're hesitating?
Really leaning on my community to help, you know, check me because, you know, the sneaky thing about imposter syndrome is that it doesn't just go away, you know, if you get to a certain status or age or what have you. So I've really had to lean on my community, the people that are really close to me, to sort of help me navigate that. Therapy also helps because imposter syndrome, you know, hasn't just shown up in my entrepreneurship journey, but in other areas of my life. So it's been really helpful to peel back the layers and to sort of confront it head on. So that's something that's been really helpful and building an internal mechanism where I can realize, you know, what's happening here, you know, what's stopping me from moving forward? Is it fear? And does that fear, you know, supersede the love that I have for what I do? And it doesn't. So that's been something that's been really helpful to work through. I've also been reading Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, and in it, she talks about the power of vulnerability and wholehearted living. So those are things that I'm trying to incorporate into my practice as I try to lead a more courageous life.
We love
Yes,
Brené. We
absolutely.
love Brené. I'm a big Brené fan. I'm a
Me
big
too.
Brené fan. I had the pleasure of meeting her in person, even doing a brief interview with her. I don't talk about that much because she was like, "Don't, you can record it, but don't put it out." So I was able to write and transcribe it. But thank you for sharing that, because I think what you shared there, I think, is really going to set a lot of people free. One interesting thing, I remember a friend of mine talking about imposter syndrome, and it's real. And she said, someone asked her about imposter syndrome, and she went like, "I do not recognize imposter syndrome." And her thing with it was this, and I was like, "Oh, I gotta remember that. I gotta write that one down." It was this thing about it's okay to be in the state of becoming. In the state of becoming something, it's messy. It's
Absolutely.
messy. Of course, if you're doing something new, you do not belong, right? Like it's new. You're becoming something else. And there was something about that becoming that's always stuck to me, and giving myself permission to do something and be in a state of becoming. I'm not it yet, but I'm on my way. And that journey don't look good. So thank you for sharing. So I hear about your the busy the before we started, you mentioned that you're a parent. You spoke about your full-time work, which I talk to people about 9 to 5, and I hold that very loosely. And in this case, as you mentioned, nights, weekends. So where in heaven's name did you, or well, really, did you find the time to launch your passion project?
So I launched it at a time where, you know, professionally, I had a lot of flexibility to be able to do that. And I also wasn't a parent at the time. And I think that if I had started this project, this business, you know, when I became a parent, it might have looked a lot different. So I started again, really moving forward with it as a business in 2016, found out I was pregnant March of 2017 and took a year off from the business. So I put everything on hold, just to be with my body and be with motherhood. And a year later, I jumped back in it through joining a program for early stage entrepreneurs in New Haven called Collab. And that was really a transformative experience. So I think through that experience, it helped me realize that I want to make time for it. So I needed to figure out, you know, how to be creative with my time. And what I learned is that, you know, there wasn't one schedule that was going to work for me. At the time, I had an infant and trying to do all of these things. And I was in a transitional period in my relationship, and I'm no longer in a relationship. So, you know, co-parenting and entrepreneurship and being a mompreneur looks different. And it always looks different, you know, sometimes month to month, from week to week. But I think what's helpful is, you know, forward planning and realizing that it doesn't always have to look the same, you know, every week. But if I'm making time for it, maybe after my daughter's asleep or on the weekend where I don't have her, then I can make time for it. One of the things that I'll also mention too is, you know, with the chaos of the pandemic, you know, and as much trauma and chaos as it's been, it's also provided me with some of that time back, because not being in the office the way that I was before COVID has shifted things for me significantly. One of the things I actually didn't mention is that I'm also a doula. So I'm still seeing clients on, well, virtual clients. So, you know, it's been really interesting navigating, okay, I have three clients, and I'm doing the skincare, and I have my work, and I'm a mother through, you know, with all of this. But these are things that I'm extremely passionate about. And I'm also mindful of my own care. So I try to be mindful of not overextending myself. And it's been working out pretty well.
Excellent. And the taking care of yourself brings me to my next question, which is, time is one thing. Mm-hmm. How, and actually I want to highlight something you mentioned when it came to time, and that is giving yourself permission to be like, it don't have to look the same every month or every week. Right. Like, I have to work with what's in front of me and then I adjust. So I want to highlight that. And I want to go, my next question is around care. Is around, how do you find the energy to do the work? Are there certain rituals or tips that you have? Because besides time, energy is the next thing that I hear people talk about when it comes to, hey, here's why I'm not starting it. It's like, you know, I worked my 9 to 5. I done gave them 95% of my energy. Now I come home, I'm tired. How do you, what's your rituals when it comes to energy to do your work?
Boundaries. I think boundaries have been really helpful, because in that, you know, it's impacted the way that I show up in my 9 to 5, right? So before, where I was, you know, volunteering to do things that I wasn't actually asked to do, I don't actually need to do that anymore. And there are other folks that can do the work. So figuring out what my priorities are, you know, in the workspace, at home, and balancing all of these things. So boundaries have been really helpful. And not just boundaries with others, boundaries with myself. Excuse me. And I think that I practice boundaries with myself by not getting into the practice or interrupting, like, negative self-talk, shaming that I might do, like, oh, Shade, you had this time, you could have done this, you should have done this. But I know that that's not coming from a productive space. So I've really let go of the guilt of also doing nothing. And in the nothingness, I recharge. So it's nice to have moments, you know, where I choose not to do anything and let that be okay. And when I'm, you know, ready and energized, then I can, you know, approach the work, because that's where I do my best work. That's where I'm the most creative, the most inspired, is when I'm focused and when I'm taking care of myself. And it's also not a moment. It's in the daily practice. So making sure that I'm making my smoothies or making sure that I'm eating well. And these are things that need constant checking in so that I don't get to a point where I feel like I'm crashing.
Yes. So I have a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. It's for a friend of mine. It's not for me. Okay. Understand? It's for a friend. It's not for me.
Yes.
So I got a friend, right, who has trouble with doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Feels like nothing. Man, there's something else that should be done. How do you... Talk to me about that. Dive in a little bit more about how you either A, got to this point or this place, and I'm sure it's a fluid practice. Mm-hmm. But talk to me more about that and what's the nitty gritty of being okay with nothing. And I put nothing in air quotes, right? Because it's providing something by doing nothing.
Absolutely. I think that there's a lot to unpack with the doing nothing, especially when we're talking about folks of color, specifically Black folks. And I think that for a lot of people, their worthiness is tied into what they produce, right? So if they're not producing anything, if they're not doing anything, then I think that folks are forced to grapple with, well, I'm not doing anything worthwhile. And it doesn't really focus on self. And the nature of capitalism doesn't allow people to focus on self, because we need to keep doing. And I think that's part of sort of like the problematic and really toxic pieces of grind culture, you know, just grind till you can't anymore, you know, work yourself into the ground. And for me, my ancestors did not, you know, fight and struggle to get here for me to work myself into the ground. It was not only for me to survive, but to thrive. And in order to thrive, I need to invest in myself. So part of that is coming up against, okay, what does capitalism require of me? And how do I combat that in my individual practice? How do I show up in my truth in my individual practice? So I'm constantly creating space for myself. And then also peeling back the layers around why, you know, I may have viewed my worthiness connected to what I produce. You know, what are some of the things that I've been conditioned to believe about myself and my worthiness? What are some things that I need to unlearn and relearn? So it's I think a long commitment. It's a commitment that someone has to make to themselves. And it's also a commitment to understanding systems and how systems are not necessarily for people as they're structured right now. So I think that there's a lot of unpacking to do and a lot of things that are connected to it that you may not realize in the moment, but it is always connected to a larger picture. And we can either perpetuate these systems or disrupt them.
Wow. My friend is going to be very happy when they hear that. Thank you so much for playing, Sade.
Yes.
Thank you so much for playing. Yeah, there is just so much there that's like a whole other episode. Ooh.
Yes.
There's a whole other episode that you're sparking in me that has me bringing together my social justice friends because of unpacking.
Right.
I think we've really been taught to pack.
Mm-hmm.
We've really been taught to pack, to stay with the metaphor. We've really been taught to pack,
right.
pack, but not being like, man, do I still need this? Mm-hmm. I need to make some room. The bag ain't getting bigger.
Like, right.
You know, of course there's certain things you learn, you can expand, but at the same time, things are taking up space.
Absolutely.
Things are taking up space. So really thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
No,
I was going to say, and then the more that I sit with it, like for me in my experience being a Black woman, right, I know how I've struggled with that, you know, superwoman complex and how specifically Black women deal with that and how that manifests in our bodies. Like when we hold tension in our bodies, when we hold stress in our bodies, like that increase in cortisol leads to other things. And we're not thinking about the correlation between, you know, stress and heart disease and obesity and all of these hypertension, all of these things that we sort of push through because we're told that we're supposed to be able to shoulder the burden, we're supposed to be able to shoulder the pain. And I think that, you know, when I think about the legacies of enslavement, the idea that Black women don't feel pain is something that's, you know, still pervasive in our society today. And we've internalized that in our own upbringing. So it's a lot of work to be able to say, you know what, I want to be vulnerable and say, I want to take a break. Or, you know what, I'm going to say no to this and be okay with it, even though I may be uncomfortable with it. And that's not something, you know, that happens overnight. And I want to connect it to something that you said earlier about, you know, sort of becoming. And there's this beauty in the journey of wholeness, of self, that for me is liberating to continue to work toward.
Those words just need space. Like, mm-hmm. You just need space to breathe. they need to marinate. there was something that you brought up around vulnerability to, you know, being vulnerable and taking a break. It's like, man, taking a break is vulnerable. Like, mm-hmm. like, you know, damn society.
Right. Like society got us messed up.
Yep. 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 We might have to do a part two, man. We might have to do a part two. That is just around this topic.
Mm-hmm.
So you also mentioned You also mentioned that you have a podcast, and you let me know if this is going too far left, and not left in the political sense, people who are listening, or right, or north, or south. Is that too far off?
No.
Please tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the name of the podcast is Café Olé, and it's something that I started with my cousin, Kaina. And we had been talking about it for years, like for at least 3 years before we started it last May. And, you know, part of the reason why we didn't start it is because I think we were both sort of dealing with like, oh, will anyone listen? Like, why? And just sort of like that fear of putting ourselves out there, because we knew that the conversations that we wanted to have required us to be vulnerable. And we, you know, we both have our own experiences with that, and being okay with, you know, showing up for ourselves in that way. So we, you know, the pandemic life got to us. We said, you know what, why not? Let's just start it. So it really focuses on decolonizing wellness through storytelling, and specifically elevating the stories of Black women as it relates to wellness and healing. We talk a lot about our personal experiences, and we've only done one season. So as we're planning for the second season, we definitely want to, again, create more space for storytelling. So everything really that I do is grounded in social justice, and I don't separate that from wellness. And I think that there are a lot of issues in the wellness space that have become, you know, the space is something that has become whitewashed and oftentimes inaccessible. So with what I do, you know, with Pascal's Body Care, how I navigate as a doula, and what we are centering on the podcast, all really seek to disrupt that.
Thank you for that. Thank you for allowing me to go there. So I am someone who's started a number of purpose and passion projects. And one of the things that I've discovered in hindsight, and now I'm looking at how I can help others leverage it, is these things that I've started and I've worked on and I've seen fruit or I have not, they've allowed me to show up differently back on the job. Mm. So I'm curious, how does the work that you do, I'm trying to find the right way to phrase the question, that you do or have done, how has it impacted the way you show up at work?
It's made me more creative at work and more willing to put ideas on the table. And not to say that I didn't have the flexibility at work to do that, because that's always really been there. And I don't think that's the case for many people. So what I would say about my 9-to-5 is that there's not a whole lot of red tape. So if I put something on the table, you know, I have the flexibility to be able to run with it. So with that, it's allowed me to explore different areas of my role, which has been exciting because I've been in, you know, working at Quinnipiac for 7 going on 8 years. And this last year, I've been more intentional. And, you know, the folks that I work with, my supervisors, have been really supportive in allowing me to really integrate the wellness aspect of what I do outside of my 9-to-5 into my 9-to-5, because it absolutely is relevant, especially when we're talking about training and development and having conversations around health disparities. So that's something that I've been able to do, which has been really exciting for me.
That's awesome. You've just painted so many pictures for me when you said that aspect around wellness and taking it back to the work you're doing as a social justice educator and thinking about multicultural spaces
right.
in higher ed, which I currently work in higher ed. And then I've worked in higher ed in different capacities over the years. And you've just, there was like this light bulb that just went off where it's like, yeah, no one's telling you that the system is created a certain way, that as a student of color or a Black student in particular, you may be trying to do something a certain way, but the way is really not for you. There is another way. And please pause for a second and breathe and take care of yourself. So I think there's another point of liberation that you've just added and creativity that you've provided for someone else to go, oh, yeah, I didn't think about connecting those two things. Or I didn't think about starting a project outside that's going to allow me to be more creative at work, especially in this wellness and social justice space. So thank you, Sade. Sade, next question that I have for you is, there's someone who's listening to this episode right now. They may be inspired. They have some energy based on what you've shared. but they're still on the fence when it comes to starting their own passion or purpose project. What bit of guidance would you provide to them?
I think that the first thing that came to mind when you asked that question is, you know, finding time to figure out their why. I think that in sitting with the why of, well, why are you hesitating? But more so the why of the passion project, because for me, I feel like when I sit with my why, it gives me space to realize that my why, my purpose, is more important than my fear. And it's not to say that moving forward with a passion project is about the absence of fear, but it's about willing to let fear accompany you. And even, you know, with the discomfort or, you know, the anxiety around starting something new, deciding and being intentional about moving forward. So, yeah, figure out that why. And is it important enough for you to move forward with that? If so, what's the work that you have to do internally to be able to show up authentically?
Thank you for that. Are there any resources, books, websites, one to three of them that you would recommend for someone who is getting started in their own project, or are there any books that have had a big impact on you? And I understand that this question for different people, it's going to land different ways because maybe not everyone's doing the exact same thing that you did, but there may be some books that you feel that are so fundamental and core that, like, people, you need to know about this.
Yeah, so I would definitely say, you know, I know I mentioned this book, you know, earlier, Daring Greatly by Brené Brown has been so impactful and so really life-changing because it's really, you know, allowed me to sit with some things that I didn't know I needed to sit with. And it was such a timely read because it's applicable, you know, as I'm reading it, I can apply it to all areas of my life. So I will definitely say Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. Also, Steal Like an Artist is a book that I've enjoyed. A friend recommended it to me, and it's a short, quick read by Austin Kleon. I hope I'm pronouncing their names properly.
Yes.
But those are two books that I would highly recommend.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Now, that is pretty much the last question I have for you is, where can the people learn more about your passion or purpose project? Where do you want me to send the people?
Yes, send the people to my website, pascalesbodycare.com, PASCALES bodycare.com. And that is, again, explicitly focused on my skincare. And I have a few projects coming down the line that will be launched on the website. So stay tuned for that. But there's so much more coming that I'm really, really excited about.
Oh, we love it. We love it. The little cliffhanger.
You got to just stay in touch. Stay in touch to be in the know.
That's it. Yes. So people, be sure to do it. Sade, I want to say thank you on behalf of No More Reasonable Doubt for bringing it to the people today, sharing your passion/purpose project with us, and giving us permission to do nothing.
Yes, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise.
I hope you enjoyed that episode and found tremendous value in it. If so, don't keep it a secret. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, our handle, No More Reasonable Doubt. Every so often, I create a free resource to help you take your purpose or passion from a dream to an actual project. You can always find that resource at nomorereasonabledoubt.com/free-gift. This is Mike Ambassador Bruni for No More Reasonable Doubt. Remember, some dreams stay dreams, some dreams come true. It's on you.